Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Patrick Fort.
And I'm Marcy Krivenin. Battlement Mesa residents hope to convince Garfield County drilling in a residential area is a bad idea.
No one would have believed that this would actually happen.
Get out the vote efforts fall flat in getting young people to the polls in the fall election.
Finishing touches are wrapping up on a World Cup race course at Aspen Mountain.
We're finishing lots of the installation. You can see they're working on, this is the big scaffold is going to be for the giant TV screen.
And we talked to the head of Alpine Racing for the U.S. ski team about who he thinks will win.
While many people will be feasting this Thanksgiving, others struggle to put food on the table. One nonprofit is helping.
Finally, Colorado's population is expected to swell in the coming years. We examine the impact on natural resources.
That's all coming up on Mountain Edition right now.
Garfield County commissioners will soon take up a controversial drilling proposal in the Parachute area.
Many residents in Battlement Mesa are worried about the effects of possibly more than 50 wells within the housing development. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher spoke with residents and the developer about those concerns.
This is our sunroom, and you can see the view and the mountains. Beautiful sunsets down this way.
It's a cloudy, windy day in this unincorporated town of about 5,000. Across the Colorado River and I-70 from Parachute, Battlement Mesa has about a dozen neighborhoods. Bill and Sue DeWinter bought their house in 1994.
The decision was easy for us. We loved the house. Everything, when we first walked in, we thought, whoa, this feels good. You know how you can do that?
The DeWinters are giving me a tour of their home, which is near the entrance to the Battlement Mesa development. Before buying, they were in Glenwood Springs and loved the feel of this house.
It was very, very quiet in this subdivision. We liked the fact that it was a ranch-style home, so that there aren't any stairs.
And with the activity center, and I was just starting to play tennis, and I had worked at Alpine Bank in Glenwood, and I transferred to the rifle area. It was just right for us.
And that's how the neighborhood was sold to many other retirees, literally. Here's a promotional video for Battlement Mesa.
We've got a beautiful golf course here. Our tennis facilities are great. It's great exercise.
Well, a lot of people think Colorado.
It goes on for 6 minutes to show the golf course, Colorado River, and other amenities. But for the last year, the DeWinters and many of their neighbors have been anxiously attending a long list of meetings about a proposal by Denver-based Ursa Resources. It has two phases of development. The first would have a pipeline and two well pads within the formal boundaries of the residential area, with more than 50 wells on them. Bill DeWinter estimates the pads would be about 1,400 feet away from their home and much closer to their neighbors. Denver-based Ursa Resources needs a special permit from Garfield County to put those in. Planning officials gave the initial okay last month. The DeWinters and others in the community are opposed to the development, saying the ensuing noise, truck traffic, and air pollution would mean the quality of life in Battlement is about to go down the toilet.
Well, I'm president of Battle Mesa Company, and my role in Battlement is, from a company side, oversee all of operations.
Here's Eric Schmela, who's been with the business for about 10 years.
We have some 1,500 rental properties, the golf course, all of our raw land, and about 100,000 feet of commercial space. Battle Mesa was built by Exxon to house approximately 25,000 employees and staff members for the oil shale development. And in 1982, Black Sunday changed all that. And then in 89 is when Battle Mesa Partners purchased Battle Mesa from Exxon.
But Exxon retained the drilling rights for the minerals underneath. Schmela and others have said that history is one reason homeowners, like the DeWinters, should have known there could be drilling inside the development someday.
In 2006, it may have been late five, but I think it was in 2006, my phone rings, and it was Antero Resources. The phone call sort of went that they have an agreement in place to lease the minerals from Exxon, and they needed to discuss revisions to the surface use agreement.
That's a document that details where drilling will take place on the property. Schmela was surprised to have the issue come up so soon on the job.
And nonetheless, our legal opinion at the time was, and I guess certainly still is, that we had to honor that existing SUA and respect the mutual rights of both the mineral owners and us as surface owner.
A series of companies have since bought those oil and gas rights, with Shmela negotiating with each to reduce the impact of drilling in Battlement Mesa to make sure it's still, as he calls it, a wonderful place to live. Shmela says he's convinced the companies to drop the number of well pads from 14 to 5 and put money towards extensive landscaping and design to hide future rigs.
No one would have believed that this would actually happen.
Again, Sue DeWinter. She and her husband, Bill, say they understand URSA has legal access to the natural gas beneath their home. But as for drilling,
whether they had had something in their title work or not, no one would have believed that somebody would allow this.
They and many other residents say they did not get a clear heads up about the potential for drilling there, whether they bought in the early 1990s or even within the last few years. As the proposal goes before county commissioners, the DeWinters plan to write them several letters to voice their concerns about that lack of transparency and the potential effects of drilling near their home. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
Next week, we'll have more on the concerns about proposed drilling in Battlement Mesa, including a gap in legal documents disclosing the oil and gas agreement.
Final numbers from this fall's election are in, and voter turnout among young people remains low. Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen reports.
Supporters of the failed Base 2 Lodge project in downtown Aspen relied heavily on get-out-the-vote efforts for people between 18 and 35. They believed young people would be like-minded and check the yes box, but the ballot measure went down in flames. The numbers give a glimpse as to why. In Pitkin County, 8% of the total vote was from the 18 to 30-year-old demographic. Campaigners used beer, pizza, and even had a bus that drove young people to polling places to register to vote. In the 2 days before the election count, 34 people registered. Janice Voss-Cadill is the clerk and recorder.
You can see that there's an increase in voter registration within that age group in October in comparison to September, and certainly an increase in November.
Low voter turnout among young people was seen in Eagle and Garfield counties as well. People under 29 in Eagle accounted for about 5% of the vote. In Garfield, it was less than 1%. The voter age breakdown in all three counties is reflective of who lives here. The majority of people who voted are between 50 and 70. Carolyn Zachariasen, Aspen Public Radio News.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Marcy Krivenin. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Some of the fastest ski racers in the world will take on Aspen Mountain this weekend. The resort is once again hosting the Women's FIS Ski World Cup. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher stopped by the course on Tuesday to see how it's coming along.
We're finishing lots of the installation. You can see they're working on. This is the big scaffold is going to be for the giant TV screen. And then this is the...
Jim Hancock is chief of race. He's in charge of making sure everything goes smoothly before, during, and after the events this weekend. Hancock has worked on World Cup races here since 1982.
Starting to form the shape of the finished corral. You can see, excuse me, I gotta take this one.
As you can imagine, he's a popular guy today.
We have a lot of ski club coaches as well as our regular crew working, and we're gonna try and get most of the fencing done today. Most of the snow prep of the hill is really finished. That's a huge project. And then you can see all this padding. This is basically all for racer protection, as well as spectator to keep them from wandering in and so forth. But you can see there's people all over the hill. We got massive crew out here today.
We ride lift 1A to the top and head to where the pros will race their hearts out.
We're at the top of the giant slalom course, which is basically the top of Spring Pitch run the bottom of Aztec. The surface of the snow itself, we now have the surface that we want, and we hopefully will not put the cats on it anymore at all until the race.
This is after weeks of snowmaking and prepping for the big weekend.
From now, we'll just, all the skiers that come down, we basically go sideways. We look for any tiny little ridges and try and smooth them out so we just get the most perfectly smooth surface that we can.
And what's the best way to smooth it when it's at this level of detail?
Well, there's this little tiny ridge in front of us. I'll just put my feet, you put your feet right on the ridge. That's where the most pressure is, and you just go sideways and try and push it out.
In other words, a small legion of ski coaches, employees, and others are putting in the almost finishing touches by carefully smoothing out the course by foot in a contest where fractions of a second can determine the winner. This weekend's World Cup races begin Friday with the women's giant slalom. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
The U.S. athletes competing in the World Cup races in Aspen have a good shot at winning. That's according to the head of the Alpine program for the U.S. ski team.
Patrick Rimmel has been traveling with the team to training camps and races. I caught up with Rimmel Wednesday ahead of the start of competition Friday. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. It's always great to be in Aspen.
So how many women from the U.S. team will compete in Aspen this week, and how have they prepared?
For the GS for Friday, we'll have Michaela Schifrin, Lindsey Vonn, and Megan McJames. We did a little bit of time trial, and there's actually two races going on in Jackson Hole right now. Based on the results, we'll define who else is going to join those three ladies for the GS and also for the slalom, where for the slalom, that's Michaela Schifrin, Races Teagle, and Paula Molson. So right now we got three for each event, and depending on the results, we'll define if there's more athletes coming and competing.
Resi Stiegler is one that's competing in Jackson Hole, and she may race in Aspen as
well. She will race for sure in Aspen.
She will race for sure. So, I mean, is that how it is for these athletes, where they kind of jump from one to the next?
It is. I mean, for Lindsay or Michaela, for example, you know, they compete in Aspen, Michaela all three events, then they go up to Lake Louise. Then from Lake Louise, you go to Europe. If they have snow. So you compete every single weekend, basically. For the ones that do in multiple events, it's from now on until 31st of March or third week of March. It's like every weekend there's at least one competition.
The racers, the U.S. women, who do you think has an advantage, or who might we see be victorious?
Well, I think we got two ladies. They've proven in the past that they can win races, which is Michaela and Lindsay. Racy Stiegler for sure has the speed in slalom. She's again coming back from injury, and she was on the right track last year and she did a great job, but she had another ACL surgery, and I think it's a little bit of a long shot at this stage. But Michaela had a great start. She was second in Solden in GS. Slalom is for sure her top discipline right now based on the history, so she definitely has an opportunity. She's in a position to win or be on the podium in GS and in the slaloms. And I think Lindsay is doing a really good job in GS too. She was very competitive last year. She's doing great in training. So those two ladies, Lindsay in GS and Michaela GS and the two slaloms, I think those are our hopefuls to be on the podium. Hopefully we can win a race as well.
How does the Aspen World Cup event stand out, you know, compared to other competitions?
Yeah, Aspen is just it's a great town. It's a great resort. The hill is unbelievable. It's one of the best hills in the world. With all the terrain changes and the rolls and the pitches and everything. So it's such a critical piece of the calendar. We want to race at home as much as possible because it's a very unique opportunity for our athletes to race in front of friends and family, because not everybody's able to travel to Europe and be a part of this.
You know, how does the race course in Aspen compare to other competitions too? How is it unique?
It's one of the best. I mean, the first race in Solden, it's also very unique because it's flat, steep, flat. But Aspen has everything. It's, you know, your start is getting steep, then you got to go onto the road, and then you go straw pile, you know, the trail turns to the right, and you got all those rolls. It's one of the best hills. It's also between men and women. When you compare all the different hills where we race in GS and slalom on, Aspen is for sure on top. And I can't wait, actually, for 2017 when the guys compete on that hill. You know, it's been way too long. You know, it's great to have the women's races here every year, but I can't wait to see the guys, you know, racing on that hill, slalom and GS, and then also speed. So it's going to be a lot of fun in 2017.
Well, and I wanted to ask you, too, about the popularity of alpine ski racing. I mean, Lindsey Vonn has become, you know, celebrity status. Do you see the sport becoming more popular because of athletes like her?
Of course, I think, and for sure in the U.S., but also in the rest of the world. There was always a little bit of difference between men and women, you know, the status and the hierarchy where they sit, you know, compared to, you know, to other sports, for example. But I think Lindsay and now also Michaela and also Julia, and there are several stars, they make the sport very attractive. And so people start more, they started watching women's racing more than they used to because of those stars. Now we got NBC doing live coverage from the races here. 10 years ago, there wasn't even an option. So what happened over the last couple of years, and also with our superstars and the success from our athletes in alpine ski racing, is going to make a big difference, or is already making a big difference.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, no problem. It was fun.
Patrick Rimmel directs the alpine program for the U.S. ski team. The GS race is at 10 a.m. on Friday, followed by finals at 1 p.m. On Saturday, the slalom is at 10:15, with finals at 1:15. Sunday, we'll see a second slalom race at 10, with finals at 1 p.m.
You can also find a schedule on our website.
There's more than just skiing to the World Cup event. Art is a huge part of the weekend as well.
7 years ago, the World Cup organizers reached out to the community for help in supporting the event. A year after that, they tapped into the schools and their art programs, having students make art to display during the event. Now, a few years later, the professional art community in the Roaring Fork Valley is a part of the festivities. Angie Callen, executive director of the Red Brick Center for the Arts, was the linchpin of the whole thing.
We've got some really great, high-quality artists, longtime local, well-known artists who got really excited about this.
Artists like Molly Morton and Sue Tatum, their work, along with some from local students, will be displayed in businesses around town. This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Patrick Fort. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram, Aspen Public Radio. Your news, your music, your station.
While many people prepare Thanksgiving feasts, some of Aspen's poorest residents are just trying to keep a roof over their heads this winter.
Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bechtesh visited with families receiving a free Thanksgiving food basket from the charity Lift Up this week. She brings us this report.
On a sunny morning, a couple of days before Thanksgiving, Linda Palevsky and two volunteers are standing among shelves and shelves of canned food and dry goods at the Lift Up Food Pantry in Aspen.
God bless.
Thank you. What we're doing here today is that we allow people to sign up for a Thanksgiving box of food, which today they're coming in to pick up. And we have 19 families who have signed up, and they will get a Thanksgiving dinner in a box. We have stuffing and cranberry and yams. We have a farmer down valley who provides fresh potatoes, which go in the boxes. And the nicest part of all is City Market provides a $20 gift certificate so people can get a turkey or a ham.
One man who came in for his box was homeless throughout the summer. He now stays on a couch in a trailer with three other men down valley. He goes to the Pitkin County Health and Human Services building every day, willing to work, but says of the 60 people who show up, only about 5 are offered work.
It's just rough here. It really is. If this Thanksgiving, basket hadn't been given to him, I wouldn't have gotten anything.
Are you going to enjoy the standards?
Yes, I'm actually not going to have anywhere to cook it, so I'm going to a friend's house and see if they'll let me cook it there, and so I'm going to enjoy it.
He spoke of the support system people in a situation have had to build to deal with hardship in the valley. He heard about the Lift Up Food Pantry from a man he says is worse off than he is.
Oh, you don't know. I mean, it was 12 degrees one morning, and he came up there, and his back was so frozen he couldn't even unzip his zipper on it. It was pitiful. It broke my heart, it did. And I was like, did you stay out in this last night? And he's like, yeah, I was froze to the ground this morning. And I was like, froze to the ground? And he said, yes, I had to break myself loose from the ground. What? Sorry, you made me cry. See,
Linda Palevsky says in the 7 years since she helped start the Aspen Lift Up, she has seen every type of situation walk through the door, including people with multiple jobs and housing in the valley.
They have to make a choice between paying for their rent and paying for food, so they pay rent. We see a lot of single men who come to our pantry. They tend to be a bit older. They have lived in the valley for a long time. They have housing, but they're having a hard time getting jobs. The construction industry was hit pretty hard, and a lot of the people who come in were journeymen, plumbers, electricians. So some of that's gotten better because the economy is better, but some of it, for someone who's in their 60s, it's pretty hard to get a job.
The Aspen location serves between 300 and 400 clients a year, down almost 60% from its opening year in 2009. In that time, Palevsky says, she has watched clients turn into donors once they have gotten on their feet. Everyone I spoke with talked about not taking advantage of the charity they were receiving. Adam, a real estate professional, is a single father new to the Valley who values his son's education and wanted to make sure they were in the Aspen school district. That means much higher housing costs and, for now, a Thanksgiving meal coming from a lift-up box. Along with their meal, though, father and son will spend the holiday volunteering with their church and working to gather warm clothes for those without housing.
So, you know, having benefited from this and never having had to do this before, coming from the Washington, D.C. area, trying to instill in him kind of the give back thing. So we're going to do that for Thanksgiving, too.
There is a disconnect between the town's wealthy inhabitants and those who turn to Lift Up for food assistance. One time, a donation of escargot was dropped at the pantry.
They need to realize that we're just as articulate and as educated as them, too. I see guys that are in positions where they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't deserve to be in the shape that they're in, and they're not living off the state. They're not trying to take advantage of any situation, and they're still in bad shape. And, you know, these rich people come here and drop $5,000 for a ski suit, and they throw it in the shop up here that sells it to the homeless people. I mean, I just don't understand it.
As the baskets continue to be handed out, so does the Thanksgiving from the grateful recipients.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday. You too.
Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Colorful Colorado may need to be changed to Crowded Colorado, with the number of people expected to move here by 2040.
All that growth will take a toll on the state's infrastructure as well as water and other natural resources. Capital reporter Benta Berkland examines the current population trends and which areas will be impacted the most.
Parts of Colorado are already feeling the pinch of an ever-growing population. Greeley is now a city of more than 100,000, and affordable housing on the Front Range is getting harder to come by. Now factor in a 40% increase in population over the next 25 years.
What we forecast is kind of what we would say an average growth.
That's state demographer Elizabeth Garner. For our series, Rocky Mountain PBS iNews analyzed data from her office and the U.S. Census Bureau. The numbers show an estimated 7.8 million people will call Colorado home by the year 2040.
A lot of areas are poised for growth.
Weld County's population is expected to double to 500,000, and El Paso County will still be the state's largest county. And it's not just the Front Range. The iNews analysis shows 7 of the 10 fastest-growing counties will be on the western slope, including Eagle, Garfield, and Rout.
Colorado continues to attract those in the 24 to 35 year age group, and that means there's jobs here.
Mark Radke is with the Colorado Municipal League, a resource for cities and towns which represents their interests at the state capitol.
It shows health. I mean, if we're the opposite were true and you were in a state that showed 24 to 35 year olds exiting, you know you'd have a problem.
But growth poses its own challenges. Colorado's housing is already tight. More people will likely continue to price out those who can't keep up with the real estate market.
And eventually that will catch up with us.
Kelly Moy is a spokeswoman with the Colorado Association of Realtors.
Our market will become not affordable for most people. And when companies look to bring jobs, and they may choose another place because it's not an affordable place to live.
That's what happened to 30-year-old Trang Pham. While she found a place to live in Telluride, she couldn't find space to grow her Vietnamese food business.
I love Telluride. The thing is, my passion to do something for myself is a little bit bigger than wanting to stay in Telluride, and that's the only reason why I'm leaving.
And realizing that most of those moving here will likely settle in more urban areas, some rural communities are struggling to stay relevant. Pockets of western Colorado and the eastern plains will stay stagnant or lose population. John Sutherland is the city administrator of Lamar, located 2 hours east of Pueblo. He says young people in his community are already leaving to go to areas with better job prospects.
We've got a number of initiatives underway by people who have just basically, I feel like, dug their heels in and said, we're not going to allow this to happen. I'm hopeful that that attitude is, we'll win. But I'm not sure it will.
The Colorado Municipal League's Mark Radke says it will take new approaches.
What I've always found to be very heartening is the inventiveness that I see in these communities of making the most of what they have and building on that.
No matter where people end up living, having enough water to accommodate an additional 2.3 million people in the coming years will be an issue. That's why Governor John Hickenlooper is promising action on the newly released statewide water plan.
We now have a plan with
measurable objectives, concrete goals. We've got to get right to work.
But an aging population is the biggest change on the horizon. We currently are among the youngest states in the country. State demographer Elizabeth Garner says that will start to shift when a large group of people who moved here in the 1970s reach retirement.
The goal is to create a strategic plan for how do you age well in Colorado. So not saying that anything magical happens at 65, but you start switching into that non-worker. And that's a difference because your commuting is different, your use of transportation is different, your housing choices may change.
Change is inevitable, which is why state leaders say it's important to create long-term plans now. The governor's office has a commission on aging, and earlier this year, lawmakers created a separate task force to study the issue. In the coming months, we'll examine aspects of a change in Colorado in more detail and what it means to those of us living here now. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
The Wiley Arts Center in Basalt has a new name, the Art Base. Under new executive director Jenna Moe, the group has seen its artistic vision change, and now she says it's time to rebrand.
Jenna Moe is the new executive director at the Wiley, or Art Base, whichever you want to call it, because the group is slowly rolling out their name change. No new logo yet, no changes to signage on the building, no new website, but one thing that isn't changing is what Jenna says is their ability to represent the whole valley.
We love Basalt, and we love Aspen and Carbondale, all of the valley. And most of the other art centers in the valley are tied to place. So the Aspen Art Museum,
the Glenwood Springs Center for the Arts, the Carbondale Council on Arts and Humanities, they are all specific to their towns. The staff behind the newly named Art Base wants to be able to reach all of the valley. This name change is a long time coming, long before Jenna came on board. It was part of the group's five-year plan. But perhaps the question you may be asking is, why the change? Why break away from a name that already doesn't have any geographic ties? You might be guessing that it was because of the Wiley name. The financial issues of the Wiley family have been well reported. Explore Booksellers in Aspen is just one group that ran into trouble after the Wiley family ran into financial problems and their donations dried up. But that's not the case. The group changed their name because they felt it no longer fit the needs and mission of the group. But the Wiley name isn't completely disappearing. A gallery will be named after the late Charles Wiley. But the transition wasn't easy. The change was supposed to come out a few weeks ago, but some family members didn't exactly know what was happening.
I think that some of the family knew more than other people, and grief is a really hard thing, and we just want to be sensitive to that. And I think that had his name come off of it entirely, it would have been painful, and we don't want that for anybody.
Aside from the initial gift of $250,000 to build the group's first location in Woody Creek, the Wiley family contributed $70,000 a year. Now they only give smaller donations. Coming into this situation as a new executive director, Jenna was trying to make sure she wasn't looked at like an outsider.
I don't think it's easy for anyone to change a name, and there's a lot of PR around it and community perception, and I think it's really important that everyone knows that the family is really pleased with the decision and that we are continuing their legacy.
And something that wasn't just coming out of nowhere.
This is something that wasn't just brought on spur of the moment, that it's been 5 years in the making, and it's really an effort for us to recognize our commitment to the community.
The name change will be rolled out along with their updated mission over the coming weeks and months. Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm Marcy Krivenin.
And I'm Patrick Fort. To hear the show again or download a Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.